I think we would call it, about service. And it seems that there was a student who went to his master and said to the master, "Master, help me understand how I can both meet my own needs and also serve others." Well, the master didn't say a word, but silently led the young man into a hallway where there were two big rooms. The master opened the door of the first room, and there were several large round banquet tables. In the middle of each table was a huge cauldron of soup that just smelled delicious and looked wonderful. However, all the people around the table were moaning and groaning, and they just looked emaciated and starving. And then the young man noticed that they were tied to their chairs, actually, and each of them had a long-handled wooden spoon that could just reach the soup in the middle of the table, but it was so long that the spoon would not come back and meet their mouths. And so the young man was very upset about this. It was really not a very pretty sight. But then the guru opened the door to the second room, and it looked identical. It looked exactly the same, except these people were sitting around the table looking happy and well-fed. And the young man said, "Master, I don't understand what the difference is." And the master said, the difference is very simple, my son. In one room, the people are so focused on their own needs that they can't really survive. In the next room, the people are using their long-handled spoons to feed one another. Jones says this is a perfect parable for the whole idea of service. He says that the answer to the question being asked in the parable is the difference between selfishness and selflessness. In other words, it is the difference between me thinking and we thinking. The parable of the long spoons has an essential message, and it is, if we want to live whole, healthy, abundant lives, serving others is not an option, it's a prerequisite, a vital part of living on planet Earth. And we shift from me thinking to we thinking as we discover the secret of life, which is our oneness with the abundant universe. Engaged in we thinking, we rise above that collective belief that there's not enough to go around. So Jones asked one of his compelling questions. He's good at posing questions. And this one is, in this parable, would you have been in the room with the me thinkers, or would you have been in the room with the we thinkers? Selfless service is not just about what we do. It's more about the intention behind the service. So it's not about what we're required to do at work or in a family or at church, but it's a state of consciousness. It's a way that connects one person's heart to another. In selflessly serving others, our motive is not driven by responsibility or ego or what we expect in return. Jones says, if we find our me thinking overriding our we thinking, it would be advisable to review rule number 5. Did you find an insert in your bulletin today? Yes. Okay, take that out. Good. That was the right answer. Take that out. And rule number 5, see if you can find it, and let's say it together. Everybody find it? Okay, rule number 5 is, do it with me, be in the flow, right? Be in the flow. Remember when we did that rule, we read that receiving and giving are really two sides of the same coin. Serving others is a form of giving, and giving with strings attached in any way contaminates the gift. Whether we are self-serving, meaning me focused, or whether we are self-giving, meaning we focused, either way, the universe will correspond to our intention. Jones says no matter what we're doing, no matter where we are, the opportunity to be of service lies directly in front of us. We just have to be present in the moment enough to see it. When we serve others joyfully and mindfully, something profound happens. Our perception of what really matters in life shifts, and our service becomes selfless. This means regardless of the situation, we approach others with respect, kindness, and love, with no strings attached. In selfless service, our singular intention is to be the conduit through which life is made better for all of us. Authentic selfless service comes from an elevated state of consciousness with no hidden agendas or thoughts of our own glory. Joseph Campbell, the author of, The Hero's Journey, right. Joseph Campbell, the author, he wrote many books, but this one is from The Hero's Journey, says, when we quit thinking primarily about ourselves and our own self-preservation, we undergo a truly heroic transformation of consciousness. Now, Jones adds that self-preservation is not a bad thing, right? We're programmed with survival instincts, and that's fine. But when we become driven by fear, it can quickly, without even our conscious awareness, manifest into me thinking selfishness. So as we begin to embody the secret of life, one of our core values, oneness with the universe, one with God, and one with all humankind, being of service to others takes on a whole new meaning. Jones says there's great wisdom to this saying. Would you say this with, can you see it in the back? There is only one of us. Would you say that again with me? There is only one of us. Understanding this changes everything. It alters the entire landscape of our minds and hearts. Awareness of our oneness enables us to enter the flow with a sense of freedom and to witness the principle of abundance in action moving in us and through us as we mindfully serve one another. And also, do you remember the law of circulation? Being of service is a priceless gift. It's a specific form of energy. And to make that gift of serving others complete, we also have to be willing to be served. I told the story a few weeks ago about my mother, who actually kept a cache of wrapped gifts in a drawer in case somebody came to visit with a gift and she did not have one in return. God bless her. God bless her. I was the purveyor of the gifts. I had to go find the gift and hand it to the person. So, you know, why is it that sometimes being served makes us uncomfortable? We love to serve, but we are not so comfortable being the receiver sometimes. Jones says maybe it's because we feel unworthy, or maybe we've simply been conditioned to think that we must immediately return the favor. But Jones says, receiving with graciousness is a gift to the giver. I used to tell my mom, Mom, it's a gift to receive. So in this sea of humankind, at our deepest level of oneness, we all touch and need one another. We need food grown by farmers, clothing sewed by factory workers, medical care from nurses and doctors. Also, sometimes we simply need genuine love and compassion from a friend or a family member, a caring smile from a neighbor, or a door held open by a stranger. We fill one another's needs by being of service to and by being served by one another. Jones says the quintessential question is, how will you serve in a manner that honors the life you have come here to be? So there's no time or place, he says, when that opportunity to be of service is not directly in our face. Whether we are at work, at home, sitting in an airplane, standing in line at the grocery store, or walking the dog, we can always ask ourselves, how can I serve in this moment. To mindfully serve others is to recognize them, really see them and honor them with the greatest gift we have to offer, and that is the gift of beholding the Christ in them. And know that what comes around, goes around, is just an added bonus. Albert Einstein said, "Only a life lived in the service to others is worth living." So engaging in this selfless service allows us to be a catalyst for good. You see how these two rules go together so beautifully. It allows us to be a catalyst for good. Jones says, use the principle of abundance to leave the world a better place than when you arrived. He says, as our individual abundance consciousness rises, it will affirmatively affect the whole of humankind. When we are conscious of our oneness with an abundant universe and with each other, we are compelled to become change agents for good. In fact, in this life, we are all on the journey together. That really is the truth of us. We are on the journey together because we are all individualized expressions of the same divine source. We are all one. Here Jones quotes Reverend Michael Beckwith, Dr. Michael Beckwith, who says, when we are conscious of our oneness, we know there's no such thing as our personal good. When the tide lifts one boat in the harbor, all boats in the harbor rise as well. Interestingly, this week I came across an article on dream analysis that said boats symbolize our minds and our subconscious thoughts and wishes. So that gives even more power to this quote. When we raise our consciousness, the entire world benefits. So being a catalyst for good begins with a consciousness of our oneness and the intention, irrespective of where you are or what you are doing, to make the world a better place, one thought at a time, one act at a time. Jones says the reason so many of us fail to do this is that we are myopically focused on our own perceived needs and what we think is missing from our lives. In this consciousness, we're more focused on what we can get from the world than what we can bring to the world. This may be, he says, because we feel isolated, alone, and cut off from others, rather than feeling that we are one with all humankind. Or it might be that we are enmeshed in a belief of not enough. Both there is not enough and I am not enough. And the truth is, the truth with a capital T is, you are a gift to the world. Jones asks, how can we bring our gifts to the world if we don't value the gift we are? This question is not to incite shame or guilt, that's not helpful, but rather it's to give rise to a new awareness. Is it possible that these two issues are interrelated? That the feeling of being isolated rather than connected to the world is what feeds a belief in not enough? If so, courageously, here's where courage comes in, courageously extending ourselves to others in some way that makes the world a better place actually helps us to see ourselves and others differently. The more we can imagine that there is enough and that we can know that we are on a mission here to be all that we can imagine God to be, to give something unique and special to the world, the more abundance flows back to us. This is actually sometimes called the WIIFM principle. Can anybody guess what that means? I heard some. What's in it for me? Very good. Actually, it has two meanings. It has two meanings. What's in it for me? Or, with our choice, what's in it from me? What can I bring to it? What's in it from me? Sometimes as individuals, I think we think that, you know, there's so much going on in the world, we're powerless to really do anything. But the truth is that small acts of kindness and love, although seemingly insignificant, can often have profound effects on people and situations that we never even realize at the time. Very recently, I ran into one of my former students in a store, and she said to me, "Do you know what I'll always remember about you?" And of course, my ego self thought, oh, well, it's probably, you know, that I taught her to write a compelling introduction or that I taught her to love the poetry of Robert Frost. But it was neither of those. She said, "Remember when we went to sixth grade camp and I was really homesick and you came to my cabin every night and held my hand till I fell asleep?" I didn't even remember doing that. Didn't even remember doing it. But she said to me, "You know, I tell that story to my kids all the time." So the point is, we just never know. The things that we put out there, the love and the peace and the joy that we put out there, we just never know the end of it. And I'm sure many of you know the story of the starfish. That one day a man was walking along the beach, an older man, picking up every starfish that had been washed in by the tide and throwing it back into the ocean. And a young boy comes along and he says to the man, "Why are you doing that? It's just a worthless task. First of all, there are too many of them. You'll never save them all. And even the ones you save might be washed right back." And the man said, "Son, it does matter. At least it matters to what? This one. It matters to this one." And that's the way it works. That's the way abundance works. So this reminds me of the quote by Theodore Roosevelt, "Start where you are with what you have. Do what you can. It will be enough." It will be enough because we are enough. You are enough. Jones also writes about the ripple effect, which I know you've probably heard also. He says, "We are all ripple makers, which means we can be catalysts for good, making the world a better place, perhaps in small but very meaningful ways to other people. Small in the way a pebble is tossed into a pond. It begins small, but just after it hits the calm water, the ripple expands, more and more water is affected, and soon multiple ripples appear." Jones asks, "Have you ever thought of yourself as a pebble? Well, metaphysically, on the pond of life, that is just what you are. Consider the lives you touch during the span of a day, a year, a lifetime. The point is, you matter far more than you realize. Everything you do has an effect on someone, somewhere, whether you know it or not. Maybe this is the universe's way of helping us discover the secret to life, our oneness, our interconnectedness, and that ripple effect is just that connective tissue that binds us together. If the ripples we send out this day are guided by an abundance of loving kindness, non-judgment, reverence, compassion, joy, and generosity of spirit, we can be assured that every single one of us is a catalyst for good." Jones says this is what the world needs and what we are being called to be: perfect pebbles to make some mighty waves. Begin where you are with the very smallest of acts and work your way up. The ever-expanding universe will support you always. So Jones advises us to be mindful that our success in the world can be found in what he calls the cracks and crevices of life. I love that saying. He says, in effect, you don't have to be a billionaire donor. You don't have to be a brain surgeon saving lives or a scientist discovering cures in order to be a catalyst for good. In fact, he shares one of my favorite poems by Emerson. And it is his definition of success. And it goes like this: "To laugh often and much, to win the respect of intelligent people and the affection of children, to earn the appreciation of honest critics and endure the betrayal of false friends, to appreciate beauty, to find the best in others, to leave the world a bit better, whether by a healthy child, a garden patch, are a redeemed social condition. To know that even one life has breathed easier because you have lived, this is to have success. So in the end, serving selflessly, moving from me to we, being a catalyst for good in the world, brings out the best in us, in each one of us. So we're going to let Dr. Dennis Merritt Jones have the last word in this series. He says, when you leave this planet and return home, back to the oneness from which you came, you shall leave a trail of energy, the essence of who you were while you were here, and it will be your legacy to future generations. May you leave the best of yourselves behind in your wake. May it be a legacy that is overflowing with examples for others to follow, which points the way to the freedom that awaits anyone who is willing to go beyond the fear of not enough to access and mindfully use the universal principle of abundance, which awaits you there and creates for you and all humankind a life worth living. And so it is. So let's take this now into our hearts as we affirm the one saying that is being said in Unity churches all over the world. And for those of you who are here for the first time, this is printed in your bulletin. Let's do it together. Together, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, and so it is.